Jerry Pippin!
If I thought Stan was lying about any of this, making any of it up, I would have walked away faster than anything.
I mean, I think one thing that they give is a sense of credibility. These equations are...
Here's the thing that's been following me.
Oh my God, I'm shaking like a leaf. I hope I can get this. I hope this is working. Please be working. Please be working.
Oh, oh my God. What's that? Oh my God, what's it doing? Oh my God. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Let it go, let it go, let it go.
Tonight's show will be a very interesting one, to say the least. We have two guests, Paula Harris. She's no stranger, of course, to UFO shows. And the UFOs and the field in general, she has done a lot of work, a lot of amazing journalistic accomplishments over the years. And Paula Harris and I have worked together on several projects together, and it's always good to bring her back on, so we'll have her here. And also for the first time tonight, we're going to have Lisa Romanek, wife of Stan Romanek. She has a new book out. And we'll talk about that, From My Side of the Bed, I believe is the name of it, and we'll talk to her about it and get the exact title. And actually, it's an interesting book in the fact that she actually gives the story from the wife, who the husband is being abducted or contacted, according to what you want to look at. We'll find out how she refers to it when she comes on. She has an interesting blog. And we'll talk to her about that as well. And she has some late-breaking UFO news and sightings that we're going to get her to talk about tonight, in addition to what she and Paula are up to. And they have this conference coming up down in Texas, and we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. And Paula Harris has so many things in the fire. Irons in the fire, I guess, is the way we refer to it here in Oklahoma. That, you know, we could spend the whole 2 hours talking to Paula about her latest books and projects. One of the latest projects she had that we recently had on the air with us, a very interesting man, and she actually wrote the book about him, and we'll talk about that as well. And we're talking, of course, about Clifford Stone, Army Sergeant, who now lives retired and now lives in Roswell. Clifford, by the way, is not doing well physically, and that's too bad. It seems like all of us people in the UFO business are all being afflicted. I know Peter Robbins had a little touch of pneumonia, but I made it out of the house over the weekend, I understand, and met with Professor Jacobs and some others on the Linda Cotillia story. In fact, Linda Cotillia was there. And so maybe Peter's going to be carrying on some of Bud Hopkins' work. And David Jacobs, of course, his promise to do a show with us when we do another abduction special, and that'll be coming up pretty soon as well. Hi, Lisa Romanek. This is Jerry Pippin. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. The reason I put you on before Paula, we're going to get a hold of Paula in just a second, is we just played a little bit of that DVD about your husband, Stan Romanek. When is that? That's a trailer. It's on YouTube. When is the DVD going to come out?
They're talking about really having it out late this fall. They're trying to get it through to the film festivals.
Okay, good. And welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to talk about a few things here, but we played that soundtrack, as I said, from the trailer for the DVD, and you're going to enter that in the film festival, you figure, huh?
Yep, that's their plan.
Yeah. I know some interesting things on your blog there. You've got an interesting blog.
Thanks.
And one of those things up there. Yeah, one thing caught my attention, and it's kind of connected to what we'll be talking about tonight when we bring Paula on as well. There were 6 UFO reports around Stephenville, Texas in February, the 21st of February. Is that true?
That's what they're telling, yeah.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit more about that, or our listeners,
well,
I mean?
Not really a whole lot. There's not a lot of names involved in it or anything. People are really nervous about putting their names out and giving a whole lot of details, but some of the reports were, you know, 4 bright lights in the shape of a parallelogram, and they were sitting stationary. Another witness saw dozens of small flashing lights in sequence and independently. Another witness saw rapid moving things low in the sky that or blinking lights. It seems like the whole planet right now are having sightings. I mean, everywhere in Texas, in Missouri, Colorado's really busy again. It's just really wild.
And most of these are lights in the sky, or they're basically, or are they actually seeing objects?
Some of them are seeing objects. I was reading a report earlier today on one of the sites that I do. I just run around and look at things now. One man actually took video over his home. I can't remember where it was, but he was seeing a triangle pattern in the sky. And when you look at the video, it looks like a triangle craft. Of course, our government has crafts like that. So it's hard to say if it was an actual extraterrestrial craft or not. But later on that afternoon or that evening, he saw kind of like what Stan had seen with the globe that was orangish red and blinking really rapidly.
I mean, everybody's using these cell phones and getting lots of great pictures.
Yeah, and we just had MUFON investigators here last night, and they had brought enhanced pictures of what they took off of Stan's cell phone. They took it directly off of there. And it shows the energy, how they did it, but it was really cool. But they just showed up to take their own photographs of where the picture was taken from and measure the distance up, you know, approximately where the tree branch is and kind of from the garden level office up, kind of see how low it was.
Yeah. We have the call in to Paula. She'll be joining us shortly. And when we do Paula Harris, when did you first meet Paula Harris?
Gosh, back in 2002 is the first time I met her. Stan met her
In other words, you've been interested in the UFO field for some time.
I've always been a believer, and then I met Stan, who wasn't. I met him in 2000, and it was after that he started having to accept it, and after that he met Paula. 2 years later, I met Paula. So I've been a believer, but never really actively.
Tell me a little bit about your book that you just wrote, and tell the title and how somebody can find it before we bring Paula on. Let's talk about your book a little bit.
Okay. It's called From My Side of the Bed, Pulling Back the Covers on Extraterrestrial Contact, A Spouse's Point of View. And it's at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. You can click on Stan or I's website, either one, LisaRomanek.com or StanRomanek.com.
Yeah, you have your own website there with your own name. I was looking at that a little bit.
It's pretty
basic, as well.
But it's a start. But my book's about what it's been like as a spouse and to live through all these, at first, very terrifying events. But looking back and what I've learned now, they're just incredible.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that, the first time and the terrifying event. What was so terrifying about it? I mean, exactly. Can you describe to our listeners a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, like I said, Stan's first sighting was in December of 2000. His first abduction was September of 2001. We were married in 2002, and November of 2002 was his second abduction shortly after we were married. And the fear for me was, at first, you know, Stan and I being in different states, obviously, and not being able to help him, not being able to protect him. After we were married, it was brought home. You know, it was happening in my home with my children, and I couldn't stop any of it. My son was taken when he was 8 years old. Now,
had you had some experiences yourself, or was it just sadly happening to others?
Later on, I started having experiences, but it's really strange, and a lot of people probably can relate to it. I have no conscious memories of anything happening to me, but it's more like a dream that I, you know, it's like you wake up from. But you have, you know, I had injuries. I had a hole in the back of my head, which is the pictures in my book, and, you know, bruising where I should not have bruising. It was just, I can't prove that it happened. I can't prove that it didn't.
Let's talk a little bit more about your book. How long has it been out?
It came out the beginning of January.
And the reactions? Have you gotten a lot of reaction?
I have. A lot of people, you know, have said that it's changed their lives, which amazes me. I just wanted to help people who are in my situation. I don't want to change their lives, but if that's happening, that's amazing. Nothing negative at all, but it's a very emotional book, very honest, very, very much flinging open the closets and letting out all the junk, you know?
When you met Stan, when was that? How long ago?
Well, I met him in 2000, so gosh, 12 years ago.
Okay.
And yeah.
And did you know this was happening to him at that time?
It wasn't happening to him at that time. He blames it on me because I
was
really? A believer. Yeah.
I had heard that before. That's one reason I kind of asked that question that way.
Yeah.
Why did he think it was your fault?
Well, he half jokingly says it, but I think he really thinks it because I believed, and he was going up to the mountains to videotape the scenery for me and send me a video so I would come visit him in Colorado. And he tells people he's going to send me chocolates. I never got the chocolates, but he called me and he says, just turn on your webcam or you're not going to believe this. And through the magic of web cameras and computers, I was able to see this UFO. And I thought he was so cool, because I was a believer and had never seen one. And I had just seen my first UFO. So he blames it on me.
And as far as you're concerned, do you remember the first time you were aware that he was having an abduction experience or at least a contact? Do you remember how that came about, how you found out about it? Did he come home and tell you or what?
Well, we were not married at the time. We were still dating long distance from Colorado to Nebraska. But he had seen another UFO. It's like the third or fourth one into his experiences. And it actually had followed him home. And he called and told me about that. Then he called me again later saying he had a horrible headache and was going to just go to bed. And the next morning he called and was telling me about this strange dream he had had about these possum people. That's what he called them, possum people, because their faces were real elongated. And he just wanted it to be a nightmare. He didn't want it to be real. And he had injuries on his lower back and around his wrist where he had been restrained to a wall. So that's...
Did many of these things happen while he was in bed with you, asleep at night, or...
Yes.
And could you tell something was happening, or did you know on the other side of the bed?
see, that's the thing.
To borrow your phrase from your book.
Yeah. From my side of the bed, it was like they turned off the whole neighborhood, including me. It's like when Stan's second abduction happened 4 months after we were married. And we'd gone to bed like normal, and really early in the morning, so like 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard the banging just pounding on the window, which scared the life out of me. And I got up, peeked out the windows, the mini blinds, and it was Stan. It's like, what the heck? So I ran around through the house and let him in, and he was just freezing. And I told him, I said, come in here. He said, how did you get outside? He had no memory of how he got out. You know, all the doors were still locked with slide locks and everything. So I have no memory of him getting up. And like I was saying, I'm a very light sleeper because I had 3 children, so any noise would wake me up. But Stan said he had been pounding on that window for like 30 minutes trying to get me to come let him in. So that's how it was most of the time. I mean, that we know of, he's been abducted 11 times.
11 times. Paula Harris, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad Lisa got a chance to tell her story, though, because these are the people that really have the stories. I just recount what other people say. So I'm happy to be on with you and Lisa. And
Lisa, let me ask Paula this. Have you ever had a contact experience yourself, Paula?
No, not really, Jerry. But let me ask you this, Jerry. Have you ever had a contact experience?
No, but I have seen a UFO finally.
Well, my thing is, yes, I have seen a UFO finally. In northern Italy, there was these sightings that were happening every single night in this very old medieval town. And when I was up there, I saw for 3 nights in a row UFOs interacting right in front of my face. I mean, it's an incredible story. I have all the videos. But the reason why I asked you, Jerry, is I don't think it's normal for us to do this work unless there's been some kind of something in our life that we may not know about. And even though I haven't had the kind of contact that Lisa's talking about, the fact that we like the subject, the fact that we research the subject, the fact that we're involved with the subject means that in some way I think you and I and a lot of other people have had some kind of downloading or contact.
Well, you may be right. I have had experiences similar to what people are talking about, but I never thought of it as UFO experiences earlier. But I've always been interested in the subject. I've been doing these shows for decades. So you may be right. And you've been reporting on things, and I don't want to date you age-wise, but for decades as well. You're no stranger to this issue.
Well, no, I started with Alan Hynek, and that was like 40 years ago. And starting with somebody like that, who was a scientist and he's kind of a teacher for me, as he was an astronomer, I knew it was real right from the beginning. I mean, you don't have to ask me if I believe in UFOs. I worked with Alan Hynek, and he did Blue Book and so forth. But, you know, every day that I'm on a plane or with somebody or talking to somebody and they say, how did you get into this, I realize that it's not normal. So I'm sure you get the question also, how come you got into this?
Yeah, that's true. That's a very common interest of people. And I got into it because I thought there was something going on, and I thought the people had great stories to tell. And I thought it was great radio, and over the years, I've become convinced that there's a lot behind all of these stories, and the truth is out there, and we're trying to find it. Does that sound about right
to
you?
Yeah, the truth is out there. We're trying to find it, and I'm only in this area. I'm going to really qualify this because people know I'm into exopolitics and into UFOs, but for me, exopolitics is the education and the political and sociological implications of the fact that they're here. And so I do not do any conspiracy theory. I do not do chemtrails. I do not do 9/11. I do not do all that other stuff. I just do ET-related stuff, which is what my definition of exopolitics is, or ufology.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to Lisa Romanek before you came on, and Lisa, once again, getting back to your blog, how long have you had that blog? It's got some pretty interesting things on there. You got all kinds of great reports and stories.
I started it 2 weeks ago, and I have 67 posts up already in 2000.
Already in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I'm pretty impressed, aren't you, Paula?
Yeah, but I think this was this kind of brought her out of the closet. I think she's been a secret writer, you know, for a long time, and I think she's excellent. And I told her this, and it wasn't just because she's a friend. Her book is one of the best books I've ever read. I read it in 24 hours. I stayed up all night. Her book, On the Other Side of the Bed, is so good because she brings you into it. She, in other words, she's like a girlfriend talking to you about what happened. With all the emotion, with all the problems, with all the everything, not leaving anything out. And nobody writes like that. I mean, I have never seen anybody that really can bring, and I used to be a literature teacher. I was an English teacher for 30 years, and I know good writing. I mean, Faulkner used to do this, Hemingway used to do this. A lot of people wrote about their personal experiences so you could feel. You know, you could feel how they lived it. And so people ought to look at this book. I mean, it is really a good book, Jerry. It really makes you feel what it's like with all the emotion involved to be the spouse of a contactee or of an abductee.
Lisa, how did Sam feel about you writing that book?
He's proud of me. He's...
So he gave you encouragement all along?
Oh, yeah. He tells everyone that I'm a better writer, and I say, yes, I am.
Paula agrees.
He says that. That's very nice of him. He does say that in public. My wife is a better writer, but she is. And but it's still his story and her story, too, that she tells.
Yeah, exactly. And he knows, and we've agreed that, you know, it's very important to put the emotional side of it out there, you know, so people who question abductees and contactees can understand that it's not just seeing something, it's living something. These events are life-altering, life-changing, you know, and it's been an amazing journey.
When we talk about the things in your book, and we talked briefly before Paula came on, Lisa, when were you aware, right off the bat, about Stan being taken, or was it, I mean, what I'm saying is you're right there in the bed with him. Basically, you talk about that in the book. Did you ever miss him? Was he gone? How does that work? I mean, how did it work? I mean,
the one time that I did wake up and he was not there, and it only happened once that he didn't wake me up, was when his leg was fixed, and he had torn the anterior cruciate ligament and the hamstring in his leg, and he was going to go in for surgery the next day. The night before his surgery, I woke up at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It's a crazy hour, so between 1 and 3 is crazy hour, and the power was out. I couldn't find him, and I searched room by room, went out the back door, couldn't find him, and I went out to the garage, flipped on some lights. When I came back, he was there. And that experience was really strange because usually I'm just right on it. I can get under control. I control the fear. I control everything and start documenting. That night, it was like, I'm going back to bed. Then go back to bed, you know? And there was a sound over the house after we finally went back to bed that was like, whoa, whoa. It made us sick to our stomachs, just ill. The next morning, I mean, and we were asleep instantly after that. The next morning, he was walking, no pain, no bruising, no swelling, and had 5 holes down the side of his leg.
Wow.
Yeah. It was very incredible. And that's when I stopped being afraid of the extraterrestrials.
Now, has anything like this happened recently?
Recently... He had kidney stones. And his...
That's painful enough.
Yeah. Well, he really had a flare-up, and he'd gone into his doctor, his kidney doctor, and they sent him for CAT scan. And he had had a CAT scan not that long before, but they wanted to see what was going on. The pain was just incredible. So they sent him in, and when the results came back, he had no kidney stones, where just a month and a half before, he had the kidney stones. But something.
So he actually had an encounter with an ET doctor.
Something. But in between seeing the doctor and going for the test, there was no pain, but he followed through with the test to find out, you know, if there was something blocked, and there was no kidney stones. His doctor's like, I don't understand this. So we basically told him he didn't need to understand.
Paula, have you had reports of people who think, I know I have over the years, people who think they've been cured or treated by ETs, I guess?
Yeah, I have. But, you know, Stan is he's so involved. I mean, this is not a story that happens just just a little bit. I mean, I've been around them and all kinds of weird stuff. Well, I brought Swiss television to Stan's house. And Stan and Lisa, and he was doing an interview with Swiss TV, and the faucet went on by itself, and the water's just, you know, just coming down. Or when just now they had National Geographic, they were there for 2 days, and the power goes out, and Stan gets this crazy phone call. I don't know, Lisa, if you want to tell him, but he gets a crazy phone call. And, you know, then there's this black helicopter over his house. Or another time, Lisa, Stan, and I were up in Crestone, which is a very spiritual place. It's where Stephen Greer does his CSETI trainings. And Stan and I had been speaking at the Watchtower up there. And Lisa, Stan, and I went to do a peace ceremony near a stupa, Buddhist stupa, you know, because it's so gorgeous. And there you see the whole prairie. And we said a prayer for peace. So I get home, and I get one of these weirdo Audrey calls that I don't know if Lisa wants to talk about the Audrey calls, which are a robotic woman's voice. So Paula gets one. And basically what she said to me, because when I was up there at this beautiful place in the middle of the mountains, I had mentally said, I hate to leave. I really want to stay here. Well, this robotic woman's voice says to me when she calls, by the way, the display was my bed and breakfast, and I call them, and they had not made the call. She says to me, Paula, you will go back. And I'm going, who the heck is this? I mean, it's like if you're around Stan and Lisa, you get all this weirdness. And Lisa, did you talk about the Audrey calls yet?
No, I haven't.
Well, tell Jerry all about how this being calls on the phone and has this robotic...
Yeah, I'd like to know about these robotic calls. Tell me about it.
Well, we call the caller Audrey because Alejandro Rojas, who is our investigator a couple years ago, found a text-to-speech program that sounds similar, but it isn't exact. And it's my opinion that there are three different sources for this caller, or this voice being used. But the first call we got was when we were in Colorado Springs, and it was a very dangerous year for us there. But it basically says, started calling Stan Starseed, and it says, hello, Starseed. Our intention is not to fear or alarm you, but to inform you that Lisa and the children are in danger also. Maybe now you'll understand you need to move out of Colorado Springs. Well, that was very scary. But the calls continued. And a lot of them were warning calls.
Did it come at certain times of the day or different times? Or?
It varies. It's just all over the clock. That call actually came in the middle of the night because it was like 3 o'clock.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to. I wondered what time they called.
And some of the calls are very much fear-based, so I think those are more the opposition black ops kind of stuff that they know what programs are being used or how this works. And then some of the calls are, in our opinion, extraterrestrial. And they say that they use this form of communication because it's easy to connect with us that way. So we're still not sure where and how it happened.
So if I understand you correctly, you feel that there may be more than one source for these calls. Some of them are black operations trying to put fear into you, and the others are, for lack of a better term, legitimate, perhaps extraterrestrial.
Yes, and the other source is what we call the white lighters, or the inside government or military, whatever genre they want to be, people that are helping us from inside of those same groups as the black ops.
Oh, I've heard these stories before from people, you know, they figure black ops is doing as much as the others. How about you?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, it's normal. It's logical, Jerry. I mean, first of all, the call I got was not black ops, and it was not. It was something that heard my brain say I wanted to go back, you know, because I didn't even tell Lisa and Stan what I was thinking, so whoever was reading my mind was the one that made the call. And I couldn't even understand half of what she was saying. It sounded like it was a million miles away. But just to tell you, I'm covering a story in Italy right now, a major story, big story. And this man, who is a contactee in Genoa, he is very much watched over by the intelligence community because down deep, they know who the contactees are, and they want to know. They want to know, just like everybody else, they want to know they want to know about the extraterrestrial presence on Earth. They would be stupid if they didn't want to know. They have a natural curiosity. They know they can't control it. I don't know what you can control about all that. But they want to know about it. They want to document it. They want to follow it. This is not just about grays, especially with Stan's story. He's got possum people in there. He's got human-looking aliens in there. He's got everything. It's about all the different groups of alien cultures, how they contact Earth's people. So where you have a contactee, you're going to also have the intelligence community involved. You're going to have the black ops. Well, black ops to me is more military-industrial complexes doing the technology. I think of the intelligence community being the ones that are looking after the actual contactees and trying to figure out what's going on. And, of course, they're not going to want Stan to talk, because they can't figure it out. They certainly don't want him to go on stage and talk about this. and you don't offer any answers to anybody. So I think that they tried to discourage Lisa and Stan, but it's too late now because Lisa's got her book out there. And everybody knows about this, so it's not top secret.
Lisa, earlier we were talking, you mentioned the fact that your family have been involved, and then I kind of got the impression that maybe you've had some abduction experiences too, have you?
I believe I have, but I have no conscious memories of them. They're more dreams.
And have you figured out why Stan was a target of these people, for lack of a better term, or how would you phrase it? Maybe target's not the right word.
Well, and he has new books out also, Answers and the Orion Regressions. But in Answers, he kind of explains that he really feels that he was part of a project called Project Preserve Destiny. And Dan Sherman talks about in his book, Above Black. And a lot of people were actually, abducted, more like taken by this black project that our government was running at that time, working with the extraterrestrials, and created these children who had been genetically manipulated, genetically altered. So
you said running at that time. Are they not running anything? Or is the cooperation or whatever, is it over with? Or what do you mean?
From 1960 to 1968. So children up until 1969 could be a part of that project. But they shut it down. Who knows what other projects are running now, what has been in the past. I mean, there are so many black projects, and under them there are gray projects. They just hide it well.
I want to get into, and then we'll open up the phone lines and discuss all of this. This is it's very fascinating, both of you. Must understand that at the same time, there's a people's story here that I want to get into. Paula Harris, you have Lisa Romanek and some other women appearing down in Texas in May, and I want to find out how that came about and tell our listeners what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the first 2012 Women's Symposium on UFOs. I wish you could come. I would love to see you there. Basically, it was a thought of mine because what I'd like to do, people have asked me a lot about the difference in conferences in Europe and the conferences here. Well, this conference is called a symposium because it's basically a dialogue. It's a lot of people are going to sit around and talk about this seriously, which means I'm not allowing any gimmicks or UFOs to hang from the ceiling or you know how I feel about all that stuff. I'm having a serious dialogue with a group of very intelligent researchers and women. And the reason why it's women is because I think we need to balance the energy. In fact, all the music and all the poetry in the beginning of this is all Native American. You know about the Native American grandmothers that are the wise ones in the Lakota tribe and all the other tribes. Well, if the grandmothers are the wise ones in all these indigenous tribes, we got to have a few wise women in our white tribes, too. And I really think that people like Carol Rosen, who is absolutely amazing, has worked with Wernher von Braun and is trying to bring a stop to, bringing the nuclear out in space, the peace treaty. She's working on a peace treaty to ban nuclear weapons in space. People like Dr. Lynn Kitai that was the medical doctor that risked her career to come forward and talk about the Phoenix Lights that she filmed. People like Angela Joyner that lost her job over the reporting of the Stephenville Lights. In fact, she's going to get a special award. Lisa Romanek that is brave enough to talk about her experiences as the spouse of an abductee. Tracy Austin Peters, who's going to be my MC. She's from Great Britain, and she has a book on abductions also. And just these wonderful ladies, and we have a wonderful lady, Karen Grisham, that you interviewed the other night. She's absolutely great. She provides a balance, a spiritual balance to this dialogue. And we're going to have it in Glen Rose, Texas, because that's the closest to Stephenville I could get. And it's not all women, Jerry. A lot of men have registered, plus Angela Joyner is leading a panel of four of the Stephenville witnesses, Steve Allen, Robert Powell, who did the radar reports, Leroy Gayton, the constable, and Ricky Searles, whom I talked to on the phone, who has so much to tell us. We're going to have a dialogue about these phenomena that are happening and how people can learn from them. And it's near Stephenville, so that we'll also get to do a Skywatch Saturday night at Ground Zero on the Odom Ranch. So it's a new experience. It's a new kind of conference. It's a new concept. It's something new. A lot of men and women are registering, but what I love the most is the four MUFON groups are meeting down there. Four MUFON groups are going to network, and Denver MUFON is the one that paid for the award for Angela Joyner. So it's also a great networking situation.
Now, tell our audience the date and where it's being held there in Glen Rose, Texas. And Glen Rose is about an hour and a half from Dallas and maybe, 45 minutes or so from Fort Worth, something like that?
Yeah, it's an hour from Dallas, and Glen Rose is about half an hour from Stephenville. And it will be May 18th, 19th, and 20th. The 18th is the Lady in Red cocktail party. It's a meet-and-greet cocktail party at the Holiday Inn Express, which is our formal hotel. And we will be showing the film The Hidden Hand by James Carman from New York. that film won the EB Award at the International UFO Congress. It's all about contact. And then the next day we have the speakers and the panel on Stephenville, and Lisa will be speaking on Sunday, the half day. Well, it will be dedicated to contact. And the early bird registration, we've extended it until the 15th of April. It's $75, which is really cheap. I mean, $75 for 3 days. And it will go up to $90 on the day of the conference. But they can go onto the website to register. It's www.starworksusa.com. StarWorksUSA.com. And all people are welcome. It's a great networking situation.
We, of course, refer people to that website all the time so they can register. And, you've been doing some shows with Steve Allen. I've done one with Steve Allen and Angela Joyner before. What did both of you make of Stephenville itself? Lisa, first, you just talked about some new sightings down around Stephenville on your blog back in February. What do you make of all this? In your experience, for instance, did Stan ever see a giant UFO, or were they normal size, or did he ever see a UFO?
We've seen many UFOs. I've seen many UFOs.
And when you talk about that, I think Stephenville is one of the most interesting sightings of all. You have these radar reports that are pretty important. Don't you agree, Paula?
Well, yeah. Well, when I went down there to prepare for this conference, I was more mesmerized with talking to Steve Allen than I was even working on the conference, because that's what I do for a living. I love talking to people who have experiences. I'm sitting there with Steve Allen, and he's looking at me, and I asked him, what would you say to the world? He said, I'd say to the president, the gig is up, the cat's out of the bag, now tell us what's going on. And here is a very conservative, you know, businessman pilot. And this is a pilot, so he knows what he's looking at. And he goes on to the Odom Ranch, and they're sitting there having a couple of beers. He turns around, and he sees this huge UFO. He said, you know, it was almost a mile long. And he said it was kind of transparent. He knew it was nothing like he ever saw. He said that whatever was inside, he felt was looking at him. And when I asked him, well, you know, this is what we ordinarily do, what do you think it was doing there? It certainly wasn't on vacation. He said to me, well, he says, when I fly my plane over that area, my compass goes to zero. I said, what do you mean your compass goes to zero? He said, it doesn't go north, west, south, or anything. He says, it just goes to zero. I said, well, whatever that thing was, it came out of that area where your compass goes to zero. Could that be a portal? And if it's a portal, it's not going to come out once or twice. It's going to come out when it feels like it. And as far as the radar reports that Robert Powell has, it shows that the planes were scrambled. Steve Allen saw the F-16s. They're chasing this thing. And what's amazing about Steve Allen is when Angela Joyner did the story, he put his telephone number in the paper, which is something I'd never do. I said, you actually put your phone number there? He said, yeah, because I thought I was going crazy. He said, whenever people have a sighting, they feel better if other people come out of the woodwork and say, you know, I saw it too. It took a long time for the constable to admit it because he's a political man. So, you know, Leroy Gayton is very courageous to admit it. Now, this happened with Romanak too, with Stan, when he saw that UFO that he was filming in the park, Lisa, remember? He had to go up to the people and say, are you seeing this too? Are you seeing this?
Yeah, and they were actually videotaping it as well. So there were two separate videos that night of the same object. And
wait, I tell you what, let's do. Let's open up the phone lines and also go to the chat room and also my email address. The question's kind of blunt, but I think it's something that we need to know, and that is Lisa and Paula, how do you know that Stan Romanak, the story itself is true, and we addressed that a little bit on the trailer that we played a little earlier, Lisa, when you said right up front in that trailer that you believed him. Remember?
Well, she lives with him. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's more than just an extraterrestrial in the window or the alien in the window video. We have 11 years of documented events where, more, you know, it's not just us seeing these things happen. There's been witnesses with us, witnesses around us, just like Paula was saying, in the park. Other people are seeing these events. We have trace evidence, actual physical evidence. We have, you know, scientific documentation of not only the implant that was removed from Stan's leg, but also the stuff that he came back with from one of his abductions in his hand that turned out to be elemental bismuth. You know, it's not just us saying these things are happening and expecting people to believe us. And it's not even our quest to make people believe. We're simply telling our story. And if you choose to, okay. If you choose not to, that's fine too. We know what has happened to us. We know what we've documented. It's real. It's happening. There is no doubt that Stan has experienced these things. Nor have
Paula, this is one of the things that I'm sure you've run across over the years, the decades. When people go public and they start telling these stories, there's always some people out there says, oh, yeah, sure, or naysayers, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I guess... in one way, that's to be expected. In another way, these people probably come forward and tell things like Steve Allen put his telephone number in there. He probably didn't realize that he's going to get so many stories. I mean, this is a pretty common instance of people seeing UFOs. And now, after the last 10 years, we've been discussing contact and abductions. And there seems to be a lot of it going on, not just a little bit.
Yeah, well, I don't think Steve Allen wanted to be part of this. I think it happens to people. But let me talk about Stan's case for one thing. I interviewed Stan 7 years ago, 7 years ago when he was working with Deborah Lindemann, when she was doing the regressions. And I have this sixth sense for people that are telling the truth. I don't do a whole bunch of contact cases. I mean, because I do more military, I do pilots, I do pilot cases. I'd rather do a case with an astronaut or somebody that has a military background. But 7 years ago, when I met Stan and I listened in detail, because Stan, I don't think, wanted to be part of this either. I mean, they sort of get drafted into it. I knew his story was real. I waited for about 4 years before I did it. But Stan Romanek's case, and this is the truth, is one of the most documented cases on the planet. There is so much material in Stan's case because he also has downloaded anti-gravity formulas that he's written backwards. I mean, Stan's case has everything, film, you know, all kinds of real proof, as Lisa said. If you do your homework, you know that elemental bismuth is something that Linda Howe talks about all the time as far as being part of UFO crash pieces. You have to know the background. And I, as a journalist, support this case because not only have I been looking at it for 7 years, I really believe it is the most documented. In other words, enough people have really researched it that are professionals to know that his case is amazing, and it's ongoing.
Lisa, have you and Stan discussed why me? In other words, why did they start with Stan? Is there something special about him or what?
Well, you know, Jerry, that's the million-dollar question. I think every contactee on the planet right now has asked themselves and others, why me? No one knows why these individuals are chosen. Is it, you know, it could be the genetic connection. It, you know, I have no clue. Stan still doesn't know why. And that's, I think, going to be a question for him and every other contactee abductee for a long time until the extraterrestrials tell them why. And, you know, Stan will tell you, you know, all he can figure out from this is that he is supposed to be a messenger, to simply tell his story and share what has happened to help others believe that it's real.
Paula, when we talked about a little bit about the conference, I want to get back to that for a little bit here. Can you run down, we talked about Carol Rosen, and by the way, she'll be on later this month with us because she has some very interesting stories, and especially she worked with Wernher von Braun there, and I think that's a very interesting part of her life, but she's got a life that goes well beyond that. You've known her for a long time.
Well, and she's really an activist in what she does because she, you know, there's people who know the truth and they don't do anything about it. She's basically trying to do something about it, and she believes that as long as we're shooting at them, and everybody says, well, you know, how do we know we're shooting at them? Well, I interviewed Milton Torres, who in 1957 was a pilot in England, and he was at the X conference, and he is in the British files that were released by the MOD. His name is there, and he was ordered to shoot at a UFO. He actually locked onto it. So as long as we're ordered to shoot at them and bring, you know, possibly bomb and do these kinds of things, Carol is convinced that we won't have any kind of formal contact, that basically we need to make it safe for those cultures. And I don't believe that we have a whole bunch of hostile cultures, or they would have done away with us a long time ago. But those cultures that want to make contact can come in safely. And, you know, so this is what her belief is. And this is what her particular, story is. I'm interested in the consciousness changing in major cities like Phoenix. My God, the Phoenix lights has changed the consciousness of all those thousands of people, including the governor that saw that. And the Stephenville, the people that, you know, saw that. So I'm interested in the fact that sightings will change the consciousness of a society or a group of people or a city.
You feel like we're getting close to a time of where exopolitics will really be necessary to know how to deal with, or do you think this just is going like it has for a while? I know there's no concrete evidence that something's going to happen, but I just kind of have a feel it's been going on for a while. It's about time for something to happen.
Well, you know, Jerry, this is just my opinion, but I don't think President Obama and the fact that the government, and by the way, half the Congress doesn't even know about any of this, will come forth and say it's real makes a difference. I think what's happening is that whoever's visiting is going to the people, because, I mean, going to a little town like Stephenville is going to the people. The disclosure is happening from the ground up, not from the top down. Enough people will think this is real. Enough people will think that, you know, that these visitors are just watching. I can't call them cosmic anthropologists. I really like, this is a term that Renato Longado uses. They're just watching to see if this species called the human race is going to survive. We're in real critical times right now. And I think they're just watching to see if we're going to make it and what we decide to do and how we decide to structure our society and so forth. And I think that we're going to have disclosure? It's up to them. I mean, when you have a whole bunch of craft over O'Hare Airport and you can't deny it, or you have a whole bunch of craft over a major in stadium and you can't deny it, I don't know what anybody's going to do about that. I think it's in the hands of the ETs.
It seems to me that the people are more savvy on the subject than some of the movers and shakers in government.
Well, they don't have time.
They're
worried about the economy and whether they get reelected or not, and
right.
They're worried about all kinds of other stuff. I mean, the last thing they want to touch is UFOs.
Okay, let's run down. Do you have a list of the other people going to be there?
Well, you interviewed Karen Gresham, a Nickel, already. She's been on your show.
Yeah, well, you know, Carrie was actually born in Glen Rose, Texas.
Yes. Yeah, she was. That's the coincidence. She was born in Glen Rose, Texas. She's always been involved in this, and she's a hypnotherapist who dealt with a group of minors who had sightings. In Virginia, and yeah, she just came out of the woodwork. She is going to be amazing, and we have you know, Tracy Austin Peters, who has written books about contact, and she will be the woman that is the MC. By the way, Women's Stylist Magazine from the UK is coming to cover this. It's going to be a riot because I think what they're trying to do is get a picture of all the women in red evening gowns. So they could put it in their Stylist magazine, but at least England will do the story. It's funny.
Did you say you're going to wear red that night?
All of us, all the presenters have to wear. It's the Lady in Red cocktail evening dress gown evening. Yes, all of them.
Well, I just may show up just to see this.
I know. It's like, well, this is my idea. I call it Lady in Red because they all need to be heralded as dynamic women. So because there's a Lady in Red cocktail party, and Women's Stylist Magazine got hold of me, and they said, can we send a reporter and a photographer? I said, sure. I mean, it's like, yeah, this is part of it. You know, they're all women, and they're all going to wear red evening gowns and cocktail dresses, and you can do, a fashion spread if you... I hope they do the story about UFOs, too. But it's so ironic that it's outside the United States that the interest is coming.
Certainly is. Now, let's see, Lynn Kita will be there, and also Angela Joyner, and we mentioned Carol Rosen, and we just talked about two more. Who else? Is that it, or you got more people?
There's Lisa, and I'm speaking, so... You know,
of course, we didn't want to leave both of you out.
Yeah, I think you named them all. He didn't leave anybody out. I think Lisa did.
No, I think that's it. And then you got that panel on Saturday afternoon with.
And those are all guys. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's Leroy.
A little something for everybody. And yep. You're doing this for only $75 a person, huh?
Well, yeah, it's. They're hard times, and I'm just hoping that, that everybody just comes to open a dialogue in Texas, and you can't make it outrageous prices. It's not supposed to be something that outrageous. So I think that's a reasonable price for people, and it's 3 days, and I think they'll have a great time.
Well, the hotels down there are pretty reasonable anyway, I think.
Yeah, they are. It's a great place. There's the Dinosaur, I think, National Park there, and there's a lot of other things that people could see in that area. And the fact that we're going to do a Skywatch on Ground Zero and we're going to have a Texas barbecue Saturday night. I mean, they made me taste the brisket, and it's really good down there. So, I mean, it's going to be a Texas experience. It will be. And I love that idea, Jerry. Too bad you live so far away. You should come.
Well, I may. I'm not saying I can't. I've just had some health issues. I'm just not traveling these days, but I may make it. I'm feeling a lot better, by the way, after going through an hour and a half of physical training today. I'm pooped.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that because you're one of the mainstays in ufology.
I appreciate that. Now, Lisa, what are you going to talk about? Your book or what?
Yeah, basically it's why I wrote the book and just, share with them some of Stan's experiences, of course, and the emotion that came with it and how we got through it. I mean, I really just want to help people understand that it's not a cakewalk.
Paula, we mentioned the word book. Every time I turn around, you got another book you're peddling. And you've been involved in two or three right now. We just had Clifford Stone on recently, and you're involved in that book. Actually, it's a series of interviews. I guess you did with Clifford, right?
Well, this is how this happened. First of all, the book is all Clifford's, and I just sponsored it, paid for it, and am helping him with it. But he basically sat down for 3 hours and talked. And I had, without anybody there, and I had the tape transcribed. And then there are two other interviews that are with me. But it's his life story. So that book, Eyes Only, the Clifford Stone story, came out, and I supported that because, you know, I work with military people. My new book, however, I've written 5 books totally, Jerry, has the daughter of Kenneth Arnold in there, whom I interviewed this year, and I was on Coast with her, and I have been wanting to know about Kenneth Arnold forever, and Kim Arnold is part of the interview. Steve Allen, that interview I told you I did with him, is in the book. Plus, there's Al Bielek time travel, there's John Mack, there's 28 interviews with all top-level people, and very important interviews. I talked about the United Nations initiative with Grenada. I talk about the case in Brazil, the Virginia case, and all the protocols for exopolitics, which for me the protocols are setting up some rules, you know, for what, how we can deal with contact. And so the book is called, it's got a weird name, it's UFOs, How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light? And it's the revised version. How Does One Speak to a Ball of Light?
Yeah, I've heard good things about that book. And I hope you have a lot of sales on that. Sounds very, very interesting. And you're always on top of everything. Paula, you've brought me probably 10 stories, if you brought me one, about things that no one else seems to know much about. And, you know, I appreciate that over a relationship over the years. But I mention it because I'm always impressed. You seem to be on top of every UFO breaking story there is. Have you missed any?
No, but see, Jerry, the trouble is that I'm a field researcher. Remember that I was trained by Alan Hynek, and when Alan trained me, what we did, and I have my little card, is I go places and interview people. I have to go there. I have to interview people, and there's nobody like that in the field because it costs money. And not that I have money. I live on Social Security. But my whole life can't be interviewing people on the phone. I think you're talking about 2 cases that I brought you, and first of them was the Charles Hall case. It took me 2 years to do that because nobody believed Charles Hall, and I did that case and with David Coote, the pilot. And the second case you're talking about probably is the 1945 crash case in San Antonio. Oh, my God, I had to fly to Washington to interview Remy Baca. I was just in Socorro, New Mexico to interview Jose Padilla at the old bar, old Owl Bar and Cafe, where Oppenheimer and all those guys used to meet. That crash really did happen. What's frustrating, Jerry, and I'll be honest with you, because you covered it with me, and thank God you cover these cases, but when I put that out about the 1945, which is 2 years before Roswell, it's a real case. It's got pieces. It's got witnesses. It's got documentation. Nobody else followed up on it.
No, they didn't. And I'm not quite sure why they didn't. You know, both were very credible. They had some evidence. How do you explain that? Maybe we're in a little bit of maybe Lisa, you can answer this too as well. We might be in a little bit of, the same thing that's happened to television with cable TV. There's just so much out there, people just can't lock on something. They can't focus in on something. You know, I think because there's been some incredible discoveries here in the last 2 or 3 years. And
well,
I'm not sure.
Lisa, you can answer, but I think everybody's getting their stuff off the Internet. I think that, you know, they go quick and dirty. You know, you just go on Internet, you just look at all the videos, and that's your research. And, you know, I'm an old English teacher, so I believe you should be reading. And they don't want to read the whole interview. The interview with the 1945 case is basically over 30 pages long, and that's too long for people to read. What I'm shocked about is that the people in Roswell, or the Roswell people, aren't interested in a case that's real that happened 2 years before theirs, and then try to sit at a table and try to figure out all the crashes that happened in that area.
You mentioned the key word, Roswell. Lisa, do you have any opinion about Roswell? I think
it was real. It happened. That's my opinion.
Yeah,
I'm convinced that Roswell's pretty much open and shut case, aren't you too, Paula?
Oh, well, God, I did the Colonel Corso. I was with Colonel Corso for 2 years, and the day after Roswell. So, you know, I mean, of course, he's telling me he's got the Roswell artifacts. He's telling me all the details. Yes, I know it's real. You know, there's what's strange, Jerry, is that the Air Force still says crash test dummies after all this time. And says it was a weather balloon. I mean, you know, this is so stupid. I can't believe that they still are doing this when we have a Jesse Marcel Jr., when we have all of the witnesses that Don Schmidt and Kerry have brought out. I can't believe why does that happen? Why when you get all this, even Edgar Mitchell has told us that he's been briefed on Roswell. So why are we all sitting around wondering if it was real?
You got a good point there. And why do they keep coming up with these far-out theories about what really happened in Roswell? They're almost all laughable, especially the last one with Annie Jacobson.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know.
Okay, now, what other projects you're into, Paula, before we leave? I got to find out more about what's happening with Paula Harris.
Well, you know, I bring you this story, but I can't bring it to you because it's Italian. So I'm working on two Italian cases from Italy, and I am working on, for people that want to do homework and that want to look this up, I'm looking at the, oh, goodness, I don't even know how to do it except to tell them it's a Zamfretta, Zamfretta. Tell them to look up the Zamfretta case. He's a guy that in the 1970s had a contact with these 15-foot-tall aliens who were not reptilian but had scales. And he goes into a porthole once every 15 days where they basically take all his memory of everything he did for those 15 days because they can't walk around among people. So they take his memories. And he sees them on a screen, everything he's done for 15 days, and then he walks out of the portal, and the portal is not a portal, it's a craft. And he just called me yesterday that all kinds of things are happening to him. And this is a case that's absolutely amazing, that Wendell Stevens brought this man over to the United States in the 1980s because it's such an important case. I'm working on it now, but it looks like that in September I may go to Italy and work some more on it.
Well, yeah, you've been away from Italy for a while.
Well, it costs money, and I have no sponsors. I only have my Social Security.
Well, maybe we can get a sponsor for you. You never know.
Well, Jaime Maussan said to me that if he ever makes a great deal of money on Mexican his shows on Mexican TV, and so he would send me a cameraman and I could go around the world and cover stories. Well, that would be my dream come true because I like doing the actual work. So, yeah, I'm counting on Jaime, but it's going to come out of Mexico. Unbelievable.
Yeah. That's I'm with you. I like to look at the whites of their eyes. Not that I don't do a lot of telephone things like we're doing right now. But there's something, when you interview somebody in person, you get an ambiance, a feeling.
Yep.
And nothing can replace that, really. Lisa, she was talking about contact and abductions. Is it always the same group that took Stan?
No. He's had two abductions that he doesn't think were extraterrestrial at all. He's encountered the Possum people. We still don't know what they are for sure, but they look different. He's encountered the tall beings that they're like taller grays and then the smaller looking grays and some group that looks like the grays called the Orions. He's also encountered the mantis being, which scared the heck out of him. So it's a lot of different ones.
Yeah, Paula, how many different species of extraterrestrials do you think we've covered? I mean, you mentioned that Brazilian case. Is that the one with the red devil type?
Yeah. I'm glad you got you're so wonderful, Jerry. At least you know all these cases. Yeah, that case is in my book because those little beings that look like to the Brazilians look like the devil because they had three protuberances on the top of their head and they were little beings with reddish skin. That was a very important case because the military policeman that got one of those beings that put him on his lap and took him to the hospital died 2 weeks later of tumors under his arm. That's in my book because one of the protocols is you don't touch aliens and or ETs because they could get a disease from you, poor things, and you could get a disease from them. And nothing is being done. Nobody told that guy to be careful or to put a plastic between him and the being. He was 24 years old. He died 2 weeks later. He had a family with small children. I mean, this is a real case. Roger Lear went down there, talked to the surgeon, the doctors, everybody involved. A.J. Gevard has done an incredible job on that case. It's real. And yet there's nothing in place for watching how we interact with these beings. They could be sick from us and we could be sick from them.
Lisa, have you had any kind of illness or anything that might be traced back to ET contact? It kind of looks to me like Paula's making a very good point there. We just don't really know what we're dealing with when you have contact. But I guess maybe I should phrase it this way. Are the ETs that you know about, that Stan's talked to you about, are they tentative or are they just pretty bold and just take him or whatever?
They just take him. But yeah. He's never come back with, like, radiation burns or anything like that. And a lot of people who come in contact with the craft especially, I know they've had problems with that. But for the most part, Stan's health, I mean, he's disabled from a blood sugar issue, but it's not related to them. It's a
What do they do with him while they have him, or does he remember?
A lot of times they take the skin, tissue samples, blood samples, comes back with a bloody nose, urinating blood. At times they, have conversations, like project images and information into his mind that he recalls. So other than that, I don't know. They just do experiments, I guess.
I wonder, Paula, when you and I talk to people and we got this reporter instinct, we want to ask questions. Sometimes we still, or at least I do, maybe I can't speak for you, sometimes I let the obvious go by and I think about it later. Some of the logical questions you would ask if you're abducted is, what did they do with you? And we've heard, the reproduction stories. But there seems to be more than that going on. I mean, I can't really put my eye teeth or my hands on exactly why they're abducting these people over and over, unless they're just checking records or medical records or something. I don't know. Do you have an idea?
Well, first of all, I do, but did you ever interview Charles Hall, the Charles Hall case? That's the tall white aliens in Indian Springs. He wrote the books on Millennium Hospitality.
Okay, no, I didn't interview him, but I know who you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, well, actually, he was placed at Indian Springs because he was a weather observer, and they knew that he wouldn't freak out if he met the tall whites. And he was, and talk about protocols of what you do. I asked Charles Hall, I said, when you saw them, did you go up and shake hands with them? Because I've always wondered about that, Jerry.
I did interview him with you that one time, but I mean, not
yes,
since
you did.
Then.
Yeah, you and I did it at the International UFO Congress.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, because Charles got to meet them, but, I don't know, do you go up and shake hands? I mean, do you touch them at all? I mean, do you shake hands with them if they seem to be friendly and so forth? And Charles said, not on a dime. He said, if you made any fast moves, they'd interpret it as aggression. And if they made any fast moves, he'd interpret it as aggression. So this idea of how do you interact with them, just like the Virginia situation, is really important to look at. And in Charles Hall's case, he passed a logic test, so he was a logical interfacer with those beings on the Indian Springs facility. Now, that took me 2 years to do that story, and I think people should read it because these people were guests of the government in 1965 on the Indian Springs facility at the Area 51. Now, what did they take? If you read Stan's story, from the very beginning he was picked, it was like Stan has some DNA that could be a little bit involved with this group of people. I mean, if you read the book, I don't know, Lisa can go on a little bit detailed. There's no accident they pick people because usually it goes on from the grandmother, the grandfather, the way back when. They've had some kind of contact in their family, and these beings are following families. But I don't know, Lisa, if you want to say, they just didn't pick Stan out of nowhere. When he was a little boy, he was contacted.
That's right. And, I mean, we know that there are 9 hybrid children. So it's very much about creating beings. But I think a lot of it also is that these races have cloned themselves to the point of losing a lot of the original DNA that they had, which they share with us. So when they're taking these skin samples and these tissue samples and blood samples, it's actually, my opinion, I'm not a scientist, but using it to reinforce their own DNA in order to strengthen their race. So, and Stan isn't the only one in his family that has been abducted. One brother and his sister have also been taken. His parents both were in the, you know, military and or had high level clearance in different aspects.
So, okay, we're almost out of time for the interview here, but I have a couple people in the chat room wanted to know. One. Want to know, is there some sort of universal greeting? I mean, do the ETs always say the same thing to people? And the other question would be the documentation. You said it's well documented on Stan. Can you give an example briefly of some documentation?
Well, I can tell you that Nancy Talbot, who is a crop circle researcher, obviously, she was our lead on the scientific end. We've had more than one, so 1, 2, 3, 4 different circles that she has done analysis on. Phyllis Budinger is a analytical chemist who did the nightgown and the elemental bismuth. The implant was sent to one of the universities, Cal Berkeley, something like that. I don't know for sure who it was, because I don't worry about the scientific stuff.
And Claude Swanson, too. He's a physicist.
Yes, and Claude Swanson.
Okay.
And Jack Kasher, who is from the University of Nebraska. They both worked.
Yeah, do you cover some of this in the book?
Yes, a lot of it.
Okay,
in
so they can get it. The conference again, Paula, tell us about it real quick.
Okay, the conference is in Glen Rose, Texas, 1 hour out of Dallas-Fort Worth. It is May 18th, 19th, and 20th. It is $75. You need to go to www.starworksusa.com website to register. And it's 7 ladies and that are speaking, and we named them all, Lynn Kitai, Carol Rosin, Lisa Romanek, Tracy Austin Peters and Karen Gresham, and we are going to do the panel on Stephenville with Angela Joyner, and that is really the reason why we want to herald Angela Joyner's courage as a journalist.
Okay, thanks very much, both of you, and it's been fascinating. We'll do it again soon, and we'll have other people on from the conference between now and May.
And Lisa, I wish you luck on the book. And Paula, I hope you get that money to get to Italy.
Yeah, and I hope I get to interview other people with you too sometime, Jerry.
Yeah, we need to do more. I've always enjoyed working with you.
Well, we're coming to a screeching halt here of another great UFO show. Reminder before I go, if you've had a UFO sighting, we have a way for you to report it to us, and we'd love to get your pictures and your videos as well. Just simply click on the UFO files at jerrypippin.com, and you'll see the form there. Fill it out and send it to us. We'd love to hear from you. Who knows? You could be on the next show. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone. Until next time, cheers.